strengthening subcommittee on human resources and open a work session on Senate Bill 5501. And we will, I believe we were done with the presentation yesterday, and we left with Lisa Kirkland, I believe it is, but to give us an overview of the governor's budget. And this is the sheet we'll be working from. So Lisa, if you'd like to go ahead about that.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, my name is Lisa Pearson with the Department of Administrative Services, and I'm presenting a brief overview of the Governor's revised budget for the Commission for the Blind. The revised budget is a 3.9% increase over the 1997-99 legislatively approved budget, and that's mainly due to a policy package to enhance technology services. The revised budget also includes a fund shift from general funds to other funds from the donations account of $43,136, and that would equate to a 4% administration reduction. Turning to the bottom of the first page, in developing the governor's budget, we started with the 1997-99 legislatively adopted budget, which is about $10.7 million total funds, $1.3 million general fund, and had 54 positions. Emergency board actions through April of 1998 included the standard salary plan adjustment that all agencies received. Turning to the back of the document, significant current service level adjustments, there really were them. This agency, of course, did get the standard inflation and government service charge changes, but there were no unusual changes. Policy packages include the 090 program reduction package. In updating the expenditure estimates, it was decided, or the evidence showed, that the expenditures would not be as high as originally predicted, and so there were some savings in services and supplies. And those savings were moved then to package 122 to help fund the technology services enhancement. In addition, $25,215 of general fund was added to that package for that enhancement. And that summarizes this budget.
Other questions of Lisa? Thank you, Lisa. Clay John. John Britton will give us the LFO recommendation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm working off of this sheet, and it is a little different from yesterday in the FTE. I found a slight mistake in the sheet that I handed out yesterday, but it's not horribly material. But I want to walk through my recommendations. This cover sheet, which is a spreadsheet, shows the expenditure history up at the top of the page for the Oregon Commission for the Blind. And it shows the steps that were taken in a fair amount of detail to construct this budget, beginning with the legislatively approved budget. That's the first shaded line. General fund of $1.3 million, 54 positions, 51.60 FTE. And it shows the adjustments that were made to the legislatively approved budget to get to the current service level. As Lisa mentioned, there were no unusual kinds of adjustments made. This includes the cost of goods and services, or the inflation factor that was added to the budget. It shows a reduction in state government charges, primarily the result of a reduction of Secretary of State audit charges. And it shows a current service level of about $1.4 million general fund, $8 million federal funds, and about $2 million of other funds. Then, as Lisa mentioned just a moment ago, it shows the adjustments that were made to the current service level by the governor's, in the governor's budget, shows a reduction of services and supplies. My understanding from Ms. Pearson is that there was one category in services and supplies that was not fully expended, and she removed general fund in that particular step and then put that general fund along with its accompanying federal funds into package 122. She also added $25,000 to reach a governor's recommended budget of about $1,420,785 of general fund. Now, let's look at the LFO recommendations. I'm really making three adjustments in the commission, or proposing three adjustments to the commission's budget. The first is a technical adjustment. This is not a funding shift, as it might appear to be, but simply the recategorization of some funds. These are Social Security Administration reimbursement funds, and in talking to the controller, these should be categorized as federal funds, not as other funds as they are in the governor's budget. So the first line simply reduces other funds by $87,000 and recategorizes those dollars as federal funds for the same amount. The second adjustment is acknowledging some bequest and donation income that the commission has been receiving over the past several years. The agency has a bequest and donation fund with a balance of approximately $575,000. And I'm making a projection of interest income only for the upcoming biennium of $71,274. And I will, the second sheet shows you how I reached that forecast. And what we're proposing is that those dollars be matched with federal Section 110 federal dollars in the Rehab Act of 1973 to reach a total funds increase of $334,988. Now, let's turn to the second sheet for just a moment. The second sheet shows how I reached the forecast for the donation and bequest income. This shows some history, the beginning balance and ending balance for each year beginning with July 1st, 1996 through June 30th of 1997, and projects this current year's income to be about $31,212. That's taking $20,278 plus a forecast for the last few months of this biennium of $10,139 to reach $31,212. So that would be what we expect the income, the interest income on this account to be. If we assume that there are no new donations or bequests or estates included in this fund, we're projecting income of $62,425 for the upcoming biennium, and that assumes the same interest rate that we've been getting for this last year in the current biennium. The second set of lines shows if we assume average donations and bequest contributions to the fund, we'd see an increase in the balance, obviously. And if we assume also that the interest rate is the highest interest rate that we've had over the last several years, which is 6%, we're looking at income of about $80,123. And my forecast is a midpoint between those two kind of jaws of possible income. Also notice at the very bottom of the page, I'm proposing an emergency fund reserve of $8,849. This is the difference between $71,274 and the lower estimate of $62,425. And this simply says that if we have difficulty attaining that income, the $71,000, we will put in a reserve about $9,000 to cover the difference. And the agency would have to come in and request that money from the emergency board. Flipping back to the front page, the last numerical recommendation I'm making is a $25,215 general fund reduction. This was not, this is the amount that was added to create package 122. I'm proposing removing it. It has no federal funds match associated with it, but it is a general fund reduction of about between 2 and 2.5% of personal services and supplies and capital outlay. Now, let's flip to the last page, the third page of this packet. I want to call your attention to three other things that I'm proposing as well. The first is a budget note, and let me read it to you. The subcommittee recommends the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, JLAC, conduct an audit of the Commission for the Blind. The subcommittee suggests that the audit reviews the sources and uses of funds, coordination of services with the Department of Human Resources and other state and private agencies, and other related issues the JLAC believes are appropriate. We suggest that the committee issue its report and recommendations prior to the 2001 legislative session. For a couple reasons that I'm proposing this budget note, first, I think it would be good if we all understood the operations of the commission better. This is one way to get at that and to highlight this agency. A second reason is that we heard some very compelling, in my opinion, very compelling testimony about the older blind program. And this might be a way to look at the different funding sources that we might use in the future to enhance the older blind program. One question when I was talking to you all about this budget that came up was the use of Medicaid funds. One of the ways that this budget was discussed was that this helped keep people out of more expensive institutions, and that sounds like Medicaid, at least in part. It sounds like what FDSC tries to do with its community-based and in-home kinds of services. So that might be an area of exploration. It wouldn't necessarily help those who are not eligible for Medicaid, but at least it would be one thing that we could investigate in this audit. The budget note is also designed to get an understanding of the full array of services for the blind in Oregon. As Mr. Young pointed out yesterday, they have a partnership with a variety of agencies and other associations that help persons with blindness. And this audit could help us understand a little bit more clearly what's out there, either in the private sector or the public sector. And finally, an audit could help us understand what efforts there are now to coordinate those services in the private and public sectors in Oregon. The second point on this last page is some language and a recommendation that this additional $334,988, that is the $71,000 of depressed income matched with the federal $110, be unscheduled by the Department of Administrative Services. And this is some language that would appear in the budget note. The Department of Administrative Services agreed to unschedule these additional funds pending emergency board approval of a commission plan on how the agency services would be expanded. The plan will be developed cooperatively with the Department of Human Resources and the Department of Education and include a clear proposal to expend the funds as well as specific outcome measures designed to assess the performance of the service expansion. And finally, on this page, I've indicated the need for language in the budget report to direct the Department of Administrative Services to include the donation and bequest funds beginning and ending balances within the automated budget information system. Up until this time, it has not been included in the budget system, although it is in the state financial accounting system. So we need to make that link and in my opinion, get this bequest and donation funding in the budget, acknowledge it in the budget. Now, I'd like to make a couple of additional points. First of all, you need to be aware that this recommendation to use the quest and donation income to match federal dollars would remove $263,714, that's the federal match, from the Vocational Rehabilitation Division or SDSU's employment initiative. So there is a sense in here that we're taking from Peter and giving to Paul. That's one thing you need to be aware of. If it were removed from the Vocational Rehabilitation Division, there would be a reduction in the person's, in the net persons served. Obviously, the Commission for the Blind could serve more, but there is a cost differential. It costs more to serve people for the Commission for the Blind, primarily because of the purchase of technology, than it does in the Vocational Rehabilitation Division. Hence, the total number of persons served would be reduced if we proceeded with this recommendation. The second thing is that it would not, this proposal would not help the lack of funding for elderly blind persons. And as I said earlier, we heard testimony about the need for helping or increasing and expanding that program. This doesn't do it. But as I said, hopefully the audit can get at some of those services and how we can perhaps enhance them in the future. The recommendation does make a positive shift of funds with the 110 money in the direction of the Commission for the Blind. One of the issues that came out in the interim and last session was how the federal dollars are allocated between the Vocational Rehabilitation Division and the Commission for the Blind. The Department of Administrative Services issued a report on that funding split. This moves the split more in the direction of the Commission for the Blind so that they would receive about 13% of the federal funding that is available to Oregon. The final thing I would say is that along with the budget note, the budget note and the recommendation to have the Department of Administrative Services unschedule the additional funds pending a coordinated plan, but this may all help in improving the coordination between the Blind Commission and the Department of Human Resources and the Department of Education. And that was also a concern that I heard when I spoke with you. And with that, I would welcome your questions.
I appreciate the work that staff has done on this. I am concerned about a fund shift that would take funds away from the vocational rehabilitation, because we heard testimony that their money is being well spent, that they are improving their productivity. And I was wondering how we might spend that money, since the testimony was there was no waiting list and no no requests that were not being responded to in the vocational rehabilitation. I mean, in the vocational rehabilitation of the Commission for the Blind. Did they in fact have unmet needs there?
My understanding from the Vocational Rehabilitation Division is that they are in an order of selection, which implies that they have a waiting list and they are selecting people with the most severe disabilities first to serve.
Right. My question was back to the Commission on the Blind, since they indicated they didn't have. So do we have unmet need in the vocational area for the Commission for the Blind? Did they substantiate unmet need in that area?
I'm going to turn that with your permission.
Sure.
Mr. Young.
Thank you. Currently, we are not in order of selection. We have been that in the past, but we are not currently there in our vocational rehabilitation program. Our biggest need is in the technology center. We do have a 6-month backlog in that one program, the subdivision, and our, we see our biggest needs is going to be the cost of technology in the future, and that the requests are exceeding, you know, our demand, and that would probably put us in an order of selection in the not too distant future.
And so, as I understand staff, they are asking for you to bring a plan about how you would spend this money, and so that would be part of what you would give to eBoard is how you would allocate this money in order to utilize technology for blind individuals with vocational goals.
Representative Roth, that is correct.
Do we have a clear idea about the impact on voc rehab? You said we would serve fewer people there. What would be the impact on them if we use this money, or is that clear?
Bill Brown, who is the acting administrator of the Vocational Rehabilitation Division, gave me a spreadsheet that shows a reduction in the number of clients served of about 241 across the biennium, and the estimated number of clients who will not be successfully rehabilitated as 115 persons. Now, that is not the total picture, again, Representative Ross, because presumably with the additional funds, the commission could serve some, but it will not equal the number lost with voc rehab. Mm-hmm.
In the conversation, I think your statement here, you stated that that the Department of Human Resources would have some options about where to take this money from to provide the match. Is that correct?
I would like them to speak to that, but if you want. But my understanding is that it could come directly out of the base budget of voc rehab. That's one place. So it would. Have an impact along the lines that I just suggested. It could also come out of the employment initiative. Some of the voc rehab 110 funding is proposed to go back and be used in the employment initiative. How that affects that program, I'm not exactly sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure we have Bobby Meek, Deputy Director, in the audience. Maybe we could ask them how this would affect their employment. Oh, there's the.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Gary Weeks, Director of the Department of Human Resources, and with me is Bill Brown, who is the Acting Administrator for the Vocational Rehabilitation Division. And in response to Representative Ross's question, you have the numbers on how this would affect us in terms of the number of clients served. We'd have, as I think Mr. Britton pointed out, several choices in how we would find the match money, and he suggested we could take it out of the employment initiative. And frankly, I'm not very excited about doing that. We worked very hard to bring this employment initiative to you, to build consensus for it around the state and with all the parties and get the governor to support it. So the idea of trying to reduce a commitment that we're trying to make to people with disabilities to get employment for them is a difficult choice to make. I think the truthful answer for me is I would have to sit down with Bill and figure out where the best place to find the match money would be. And I'm not sure we can give you the exact answer, but I would not first look at the employment initiative, I guess. I need to tell you that. I would try to look for other ways within the division and within the department to try to find the match if we were to lose it in this instance. And Bill may be able to tell you a little bit more about the kind of individuals who wouldn't receive services if this were to, if this transfer were to take place.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bill Brown, and I'm the Acting Administrator of the Vocational Rehabilitation Division. Mr. Britton talked to you about the impact of the individuals, the numbers of individuals that wouldn't be served, and those numbers are based basically on our average costs that we have per client served and per rehabilitation. What we would do if there was not
a backfill of some sort would be we would take the money out of our case services budget because we would not want to reduce the number of FTE that we have because they provide direct services to people. The impact of that, you may recall in our testimony, is that the each counselor is given approximately $100,000 per year to work with a certain number of clients. What this would do would be to reduce the available number of dollars to each counselor by about 1.5%. In pure numbers, it would be they would have about $98,000 plus to spend over the course of a year on people with disabilities rather than $100,000.
Doing it that way would enable us not to affect our program for employing people with disabilities.
Joe, could you just repeat the last couple of sentences because I just didn't quite get it.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Ross, what we would do if we lost the money that's being proposed here, the simplest way that we would do it, we would reduce the case service budget, which is a budget that we allocate to each of our counselors each year to provide services to upwards of 175 people with disabilities. Right now, we give them approximately $100,000 per year to serve people. It would be reduced to about $98,000, maybe $300 or $400. It'd be about a 1.5% to 1.75% cut in the available dollars that we could provide services to people with disabilities.
Actually, that makes me follow up on to ask the question. It seems like a large number of people that would be affected by this for such a small amount that's reduced. I'm having trouble.
Madam Chair, what we did here to come up with these particular numbers are to let's look at the average cost per client served within our case service budget, and also the average cost per rehabilitation in our case service budget, and just came up with a number. That's how we got the number, just on an average cost basis.
Well, let me mention something else too in discussion. One thing that is possible to do is that every year at the end of the federal fiscal year, the U.S. Department of Education makes a reallotment of what I'm calling leftover Section 110 dollars. In other words, federal dollars that cannot be matched by the state, by all states. And generally, if a state requests additional dollars and has the state match in hand to do that, the feds are responsive and will give you something. They may not give all that you ask for, but you generally get something out of the deal. Perhaps an alternative is to, again, use the $71,000 request income as state match, but rely upon the reallotment at the end of the federal fiscal year to see what we can get with that match. Now, the maximum amount that we could get in any case is the $263,000 over the course of a biennium. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The risk there is that there may not be reallotment dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one alternative. Mm-hmm. Another alternative is to say, well, we're not going to do any more on the governor's budget for Section 110 and for a vocational program, but we are going to direct the commission to use the $71,000 for the older blind program. There's about $450,000 in the budget right now. They're the 9-to-1 match. Is that correct, Mr. Young? 10%.
Older blind fund is matched 9-to-1, but there is no additional federal money to be matched.
There is no additional federal dollars, but simply to use the $71,000 for the older blind program.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I think that has some real promise. The federal match of this extra allocation is something that the Commission for the Blind has never taken advantage of before. I think this is an example of how we'd like for them to be looking for other funds and aggressively doing that. What we could do, which is variation on what you're suggesting is we could take the $71,000, seek to match it with federal funds this year. In the meantime, they're working on their plan. But if they don't get the money, if they don't get the match, then they could put it into the services for the elderly the second year.
Okay, so Representative,
that would be eight ways.
Saying that, that put the $71,274 toward the reallotment money,
yes,
for the federal funds of the fiscal year and not affect the voc rehab budget.
Mm-hmm.
And if that reallotment money doesn't come through, they would then use the $71,274 for the older blind program.
Right. I would see that as one possibility because
We
really need every cent we can for the older, newly blind.
I agree.
Because they benefit so much from a small amount of money.
That's right. And we heard that Salem doesn't have a half-time
person. Doesn't even have anything.
Mm-hmm. That might help to do that. John, is there viability to that scenario?
Yes.
I'm wondering what the other committee members' comments on that would be.
It sounds like a reasonable plan to me, I think.
Madam Chair, I share that opinion. I think we did hear real strong testimony about the elder blind program.
Mm-hmm.
And I also don't like the idea of taking out a voc rehab.
I agree. We heard very
problem.
I mean, really, I talked about this prior, but if we're sitting here and I'm realizing that it's going to affect the number of people in the vocational rehabilitation, I just don't want to do that. The compelling, it really does help a lot of very, very motivated people to get jobs. And so from that standpoint, I really hate to take away from that voc rehab. So, I was writing notes here, too, saying, can't we use that $71,000 from some other way? And I really like the idea. How long, when is the end of the federal fiscal year?
The reallotment memo is generally sent out in July, and the end of the federal fiscal year is September 30th.
So it's not very, September 30th. We would know maybe by
July or August, I believe. Is that right, Mr. Young? Is that
That figure should be out in August, and if patterns recent years, it'll be, I think our share would be less than $10,000 if we can match it.
I don't think that's true.
And we have, I might add, you picked up that money in the past, but subsequently, in the old days, you could pick up all the money that you could match. Mm-hmm. Now it's divided amongst those states who want to match it based on the size of their agency and their state. So if Illinois, for instance, comes in, they get the big dog share of that money because they're a larger population state in New York and California and the smaller states. So we can no longer grab every dollar we could possibly, we can just grab our proportion to the size of the other states in the request for the allotment.
Madam Chair, another thing to consider is that the employment initiative is a package. It's a general fund package. And if it were for some reason to not be included, we would be leaving federal dollars.
Another dollar sitting there waiting.
The $110 on the table.
Okay.
And that's another consideration, which we would rather not do. We have not made a decision on the employment initiative in the subcommittee, obviously.
Gary?
Madam Chair, can I offer one other thing? We've got a pretty good history on the reallotment. In the last couple of years, it's been well over $200,000. In 1 year, it was as much as $900,000 on reallotment dollars. One possibility is to urge the Blind Commission to do the best they can to take advantage of the reallotment, see what they get, see what we get, and we may be able to actually transfer some of our reallotment. Our reallotment dollars are not in the budget, so they're extra dollars. So we can see what the Blind Commission is able to generate, and what we're able to generate, we may be able to transfer monies back and forth and stuff as a way to make this all work out.
I do have a question now, too, about the reallotment funds. These federal funds could only be used for still the vocational?
Yes.
Not the elder one.
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. But hopefully after our committee, or the joint legislative audit committee and the commission, you know, comes up with a plan, they may be able to do a plan for the elder one. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fisher.
On our budget discussions, I think it's fair to mention the track record of Commission for the Blind. And I know when I arrived at the legislature in 1993, we had a real crunch that year, that session, trying to work for the budget and so much extra money was being asked for. And if memory serves me correct, the Commission for the Blind was one of the few agencies that came in and was concerned and worked very hard to work with us in reducing their needs where they could and going out and working on some other firms and things. And I would like to commend them for that and feel that they have, I think, been very cooperative with the needs of the legislative Ways and Means Committee. I'm for that, and I'm trying to have us keep that in the back of our minds as we're dealing with our budget.
And I'd like to support what Senator Fisher's been saying, because I think anecdotally we've seen a lot of people that the Commission for the Blind has helped, and I think that they are going to expand their service in the future. We have a lot of things, new things coming up with technology. We have a lot of opportunities to help people in ways that we have not helped them before. And I think that's why this plan, the cooperative plan, is so important, that we fit in the technology. This agency is going to expand in the future and have more responsibilities. I think you're right, Senator Fisher.
Thank you.
Okay, you might take a recess. I'm going to do it. I would like to work on that 10-minute recess.
Okay.
Our staff, John Britton, is going to make a proposal for us here.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You have a
form.
Okay, the proposal is this, that we use the bequest and donation income in two different ways. The first is to direct the Commission for the Blind to spend half of that forecasted income, $35,637, for the Older Blind program. So we would enhance the Older Blind program by $35,637. The other half of the $71,274 would be used to capture reallotment dollars throughout the whole course of the biennium. And if we need to work something out with the Department of Human Resources, we still are going to have a cooperative plan. They can facilitate the application for reallotment. The reallotment dollars. So the proposed budget, and I would add that the Commission would need to come in to the Emergency Board with a cooperative plan and also ask for expenditure limitation equaling the reallotment amount.
Right. Okay.
So this would change the overall budget. We would remove the $263,714, and let me calculate that change in the federal funds. The $8,104,764.
Would you say it again?
$8,104,764 total federal funds at the bottom of the page. Total budget would be $11,468,846.
Okay.
And again, we would include in the we would include the same budget note. The unscheduling language would change a bit because without the limitation in the budget, the Commission would have to come in for Emergency Board approval of the plan and also to get the expenditure limitation necessary for the reallotment dollars.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, are you ready for a motion?
I am.
Okay. Madam Chair, I would move that we accept Alico's recommendation that half of the interest from the bequest, $35,637, be allocated to the Older Blind program, and that would end up with the federal funds of $8,104,764 and total funds of $11,468,846. And that we continue the budget note as recommended by staff, with the understanding that the Commission for the Blind would bring back to the Emergency Board a plan for the allocation of the new funds, and that the Department of Human Resources assist them to, in applying for the reallocated unused funds that are unused or unextended by the state.
Right. Is there anything about a spending limitation also that's included in that, or that's a portion of the keyboard?
That's right. There is no unscheduling necessary because we haven't given an expenditure limitation, but they would need to come in and return for expenditure limitation.
And also staff could explain this in the budget narrative itself.
That would be our intention, yes. That's Senator Ross's
intention. Okay. We have heard the motion by Representative Ross. Is there a discussion?
Madam Chair, the reason we only use half of the amount is because we don't have enough federal funds to match. I mean, there will not be enough federal funds to match.
Go ahead. Yes. Madam Chair, Senator Yee, there may or may not be federal funds to match. The reallotment process depends on what other states do not spend. We are counting and will put in this budget report that the Department of Human Resources, which may be able to leverage more or have more allotments granted to them, will assist the Commission for the Blind in going after whatever reallotment dollars are on the table. So, and I also think the response to your question is that in our discussions, we felt that $35,637 was a modest increase to the Older Blind program as well, and that we wanted to do that too.
So, Senator Yee, that other half is actually going to the Older Blind, and if money isn't fungible for them to do both programs, we have to divide it. So that's why I think the committee felt from the testimony that the Older Blind program could use any amount of dollars.
Yes, because I was thinking his original plan is to use the whole $71,000 for the match, and if there isn't enough federal money for the match, in the second year, you use the whole thing for the Older Blind program.
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, we're going to recommend in our budget report that the $35,000 used to capture federal match would be available to the Commission for the entire biennium.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, there are two federal fiscal years that would be ending
mm-hmm.
During the upcoming biennium, and they could go after reallotment dollars. Correct.
So they could get the maximum amount of any reallotment dollars that are there if there weren't enough to match that the first year they tried.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I can see a slight advantage of Plan B over Plan A.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Great. Any other discussion?
No.
Well, I'm fine with this particular sheet and the compromise we've drawn, but under the general idea of bequests and donations, I have a little bit of concern about on page 3, your third comment, new language in the budget report, direct gas will include the donations and bequest funding. Fund beginning and end balances in the automated budget information system. I just want to ensure that nothing that's done makes it look more like people are making bequests or donations to the state of Oregon. I mean, they make them to the School for the Blind, or they make them to some cause. So nobody gives Oregon. I mean, Oregon.
That's right. It's complicated. You're right.
So my point is that, you know, I know a little bit more about donations and bequests than I do about this other end of it, but I just want to make sure we don't do anything to that very touchy area, and I see Mr. Young shaking his head, because I don't know where these gifts and bequests and so on come from, but they come from people, I'm sure, that feel a real debt of gratitude to the commission or to the school or to whatever. And I just want to make sure nothing messes up that kind of delicate balance.
You bet.
Okay, Madam Chair and Senator Shields, a couple of things in response. First of all, in statute, there is a Commission for the Blind Bequest and Donation Fund. So we're not tinkering with statutes here.
Okay.
The money that does come to the Commission for the Blind is directed by statute to go into that bequest and donation fund and be deposited with the state treasurer. So this simply is a recommendation to include language in the budget report that shows the existence of this fund when a budget analyst such as myself or Ms. Pearson looks at the budget. They're aware of it. They know it's there. The other thing I wanted to say is that for the Department of Higher Education, for example, we run all requests and donations through that budget. I don't know for a fact whether the beginning balance or ending balance is included in the ABIS, but I can find that out and let you know if you want me to.
It's not necessary. I just don't want to tinker with people willingly, happily making donations.
I certainly agree with that. We need to, but I also agree with the idea that we should be able to, it should be visible to the budget analysts, and because we do have the oversight. Any further discussion? If not, are there any objections? Okay, that motion is passes, which means, are you also recommending that we send this to the full committee with a
recommendation?
Okay.
Madam Chair, could I mention a couple things that I like about this proposal?
Okay.
One of them is that I want to clear the record that any effort to move vocational rehabilitation money to this agency was expressed 2 years ago in terms of administrative overhead paid to the department, not out of client services.
Mm-hmm.
I want to clear that up. Number two, this agency has taken the lead nationally in getting older blind funding from its very inception in 1985. Senator Hatfield and a blind, deafblind woman from Oregon was the leader, and we have continued to be the leader in this role. And I like about this proposal is that it does address the issue of funding for the older blind. This will move us now to be one of 8 states that does not contribute a local share beyond the match. Although the donations funded from the agency itself, we now are, you know, now there are only 7 states that don't put a local funding into older blind beyond the minimum to match the program. So I'm very pleased that we're moving in that direction.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
Can I request the unanimous consensus of Senator Rose to allow me to cast a vote on the commission for the blind?
Yes. Representative Strobeck has asked unanimous consent to allow him to cast a vote on the commission for the blind budget. Is there any objection?
Does that mean he sits silently like we all did when you asked
the question? Yes. That's why I didn't actually ask for a roll. But so moved and
votes aye.
Penny votes aye.
All right.
Thank you.
It will not change the answer. I know. Well, we were all aye. There was no objection. So. Okay. We're going to open the public hearing on House Bill 5029, and we're going to hear today from the director of the Department of Human Resources.
Yeah. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Gary Weeks, director of the Department of Human Resources, and he's here to talk to you about the director's office budget. I'm going to start at a place that I started about 12 weeks ago with you. I didn't need to remind you that probably. I think Sherman's Marshall Street took about 7 or 8 days, and then Angela took a couple of years to be the staff. So we're sort of
in between that whole process. I think we were in front of the committee for 16 weeks last year, or last meeting, so we're on our way. But Trace, I'd like to start with you, and you have a booklet that we prepared on the director's budget, and if I could get you to turn to page 3. I mentioned in my earlier remarks back, in my beginning remarks back in early February, that there were 3 agendas that I had in the department for the last 4 years since my appointment. And those were for this agency to become more focused on outcomes that we could demonstrate to the legislature and the governor, so that if we get money for a certain program, we're able to report back what happened to that investment. And I wanted us to be much more focused on that. The outcomes piece of it, I think, does more than just give you information about what we've done. It provides for me a framework of how our programs and our policy decisions get made. If we've got some kind of outcome basis for it, it provides a justification for the budget that we have before you, and it sets up for me an information management system where I have the information, as well as other administrators in the department, to really effectively manage the department. So that was one of the agenda items I had when I took this step. The second one was to develop a very strong community partnership orientation, and I wanted to base that on the history of this department with its community ties. And that history is in mental health, where mental health services have for many, many years been delivered to local mental health organizations, on public health, where we have relied on local public health offices for many, many years to develop to deliver public health services, and on A&D history, alcohol and drug history, which has been one of a very important local partnership for a long, long time. So the department has had, I think, a good, strong local partner focus. And I wanted this department to go beyond those historical partnerships and begin to develop even newer ones. And you can see by the bullets on page 3 that my hope was for us to link with others to achieve our goals, and that the partners that I have in mind are the clients, the providers, local government agencies, other state agencies, and units within the Department of Human Resources itself. One of the first things that I did in taking this job to create was to create something we call the Community Partnership Team, which was to bring together in the director's office from around the department, and I gathered people that, a small group of people, that I knew had good experience in working in local communities, that had done technical assistance work, that had done community mobilization work, and brought those folks into the department and created this core group that would be our vanguard for moving the department ahead in this local community initiative, and also the place where we would locate programs that were more statewide but community focused, and programs that Lenny Bjornson, who will tell you about in a minute here, includes all of our service integration sites. We have now 37 service integration sites in 34 counties. We have the responsibility for enterprise communities. We have the state volunteer program, which has a long and, I think, glorious history of helping people across this state with thousands and thousands of hours of volunteer activity each year. We have the AmeriCorps group located in the community partnership. The AmeriCorps team is a group of about 12 folks that are funded through AmeriCorps, and they help us with the RAP program, the Reducing Adolescent Pregnancy program. We've also put the Lifespan Respite Care program that this assembly approved 2 years ago as part of our community partnership team. And if Senator Fisher was here, he would know that there's a bill that's gone through his committee for the creation of a pain management advocate, which the members of that committee want located in the community partnership team, because the pain management advocate's job is one that the statewide education, training, technical assistance, community mobilization sort of activity that fits within the community partnership arena. I was lucky to get Lenny Bjornson here to head that group. Lenny has and he'll tell you more about his work in a minute, but has a long history of working in county government, specifically with commissions on children and families and other groups, and was the kind of person that I wanted to lead this community outreach. So that is the second of the agenda items of the community partnership team. The third agenda item that I had from the very start was to make this department a true department. In 1971, when this agency was created, the language in the budget report and in the statutes talk about creating a department
in order to enhance the integration of all the various services under human resources. And for 28 years, we sort of struggled with that, I think, and one of my goals was to cause the divisions and the programs within the department to not act as individual agencies or entities, but to act as a part of a whole. And by that, I mean being able to use staff across agencies to be able to share resources across agencies to avoid the redundancy that we've had from historically in some of our rules and the way that we administer programs. And I think we've moved a long way in that direction in 4 years. And if you were to talk with folks from the communities, they would tell you that there's been considerable movement in that way. The merger is not just of programs, but also a merger of administrative services. And you helped us along with that in 1995 by taking $5.5 million out of the department's budget in anticipation of the fact that we could save that kind of money by merging admin services, and by admin services meaning information systems, personnel, accounting, purchasing, communications, payroll. All of those things existed in 1995 and before in each division of the department. And we had long conversations with the legislature in 95 about centralizing all that. And the legislature made the decision to reduce the budget by $5.5 million total funds, $3 million general funds, in anticipation that we could save that kind of money. And we did. We merged those organizations over the 95-97 biennium, and we managed to do it and produce the savings that the Assembly expected out of it. That wasn't an easy process, I got to tell you. To take six divisions, each of which had their own whole administrative operations, and bring those things together was not fun, but it's been done, and there's still more to do, quite frankly. I mean, we're trying to build an internal audit program within DHR, which we'll talk to you more about. We run the largest agency in state government with one internal auditor in the director's office. John Latimer and John Radford, who heads DAS County, both plan to be here sometime this week to talk with you about their concerns about internal auditing within the state's largest agency. Representative Ross worked in the agency, so she has some sense of how the administration goes. But he moved on to better things, and so. Anyway, we think that we had some real successes in the administrative merger, as well as in the way that the divisions are acting in concert today, much more so than they were historically.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, a legislator who is no longer here really used to say, why do we pass all these laws, and why can't agencies, you know, agencies should be able to go ahead and do a lot of this without a law to mandate it, so to speak. How much of this could have been accomplished without legislation that you're talking about right now? Or would it have been?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Loken, I think it depends on how much the agency wanted to take it on. I mean, to some extent, it's helpful to me to have the legislature, you know, push this initiative. It helps me as a director to go back to the department and say, we're going to do this, one, because it's going to produce a more effective organization, but two, because the legislature expects it. The legislature expects us to operate more efficiently, more effectively, and at less cost. And having that behind me, frankly, makes it a whole lot easier. Before I took the job, I think there wasn't that kind of support from the legislature to actually make the department function as a department. And I don't think there was an interest in the part of the leadership of the department historically to do that. And I don't fault them. I mean, everybody has their own style of doing business. And for me, the future of this agency is based on the fact that these six divisions and three programs are able to work in a collaborative and coordinated way. We cannot get the job done in the future without that. Now, I'm going to continue to push that as long as I'm here, but I think historically there wasn't that initiative. And I have to tell you, historically, the legislature appropriated money by each division. So
So every division had an appropriation. Every division had an agency number. And so when there was a letter from the governor that said, dear agency head, one went to every division. And in 1997, we got the single appropriations for all divisions merged into three. So kind of three appropriations instead of eight. But the message was from the legislature, you are, in fact, separate entities. Because we're going to give you each a separate appropriation. We're going to give you a separate FTE limit. And we're going to treat you as a separate agency. And that's, frankly, what I'm interested in breaking down. And we began it in 97 when you merged the appropriations, you merged the limitation, you gave the director the authority to actually transfer positions and dollars across divisions and really begin to run this agency like a single agency. So I think there's a lot of history behind it.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that answer because I feel, too, that it shows the desire of the legislature, and I'm glad to see that you as the director see that is giving you a mandate that you can use constructively within your agency.
It's been very helpful.
Certainly power to do that.
Thank you. Gary, we've had a lot of your various units presenting their budgets lately, and I wish I could remember. I didn't one of them win a something like the equivalent of the Baldrige Award or some sort of an efficient turnaround kind of an award? And do you remember which agency that was?
Yeah, I do, Madam Chair. Let's just go back. AFS won the award that you're talking about, and it was for for management, but it was more for changing the culture of the workforce. AFS invested a lot in the training of its staff to move the staff from being purely determiners of eligibility determination specialists, as they were, to case management. And we invested a lot in that and changed the complete culture. And the award they won was for that.
Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, we're going to talk a little bit about after we do community partnership presentation that Lenny will work on. We will go in and talk more about the finance of the agency, the Governor's Advocacy Shop, which I want to spend some considerable time with you about, and the Office of Information Services. All of the things that we're going to talk about over the next couple of days are in place to support programs, to support services to clients. And I need to say that as clearly as I can to you, because it's often the case that when we look at how we can reduce budget and stuff, it's let's go to the administration, we can cut the administration. And to some extent, that was true in DHR. We cut administration $5.5 million in 1995. But it comes to a point where you can't cut your administration without having some impact on the way your programs are supported and operated and so on. And so I will do my best to try to present a budget for the director's office and the administration of the agency that shows that it is based on the needed supports for programs out in the field. So at this point, I'm going to stop and ask Lena Bjornson to begin his presentation on the community partnership team.
Very good. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lenny Bjornson. I work for Gary and as the director of the community partnership team. In your booklet, if you turn to page 9, what I'll do is, we have a few moments here this afternoon, is review our responsibilities, talk about some of our results. We have one guest that I'd like to call to provide some testimony from one of our local perspectives, one of our local managers. And I do have some letters of support from some of our local customers. On page 9, I would emphasize that the community partnership team has a very unique role and responsibility in the human services industry. It strikes me, and I'm very pleased, by the way, to be here and proud to be talking about this opportunity. As I left Clackamas County after a number of years to come to work for state government, I came here because of the unique opportunities and the great promise we had of forging partnerships between local and state governments, towns, neighbors, neighborhoods, and the agencies of our departments, as well as agencies throughout state government. Our role, as I point out in the second paragraph here, focuses not on traditional service delivery, and more on forging partnerships with state, local governments, not-for-profit groups, neighborhoods, schools, senior centers, and other providers of social services. We indeed believe in our vision that the better way to get the outcomes is through coordination and collaboration of many different service providers and clients and parents and elders and people with disabilities in the pursuit of their better outcomes. It's very difficult nowadays, as you know, in our industry, to be able to achieve a great outcome all by yourself. As in a single agency, you have to work with many different players to make things work as well as they could. One of the innovative parts about the community partnership team is that we focus everything we do on a set of outcomes either derived by the departments, neighborhoods, towns, or counties. Those outcomes may look like Oregon benchmarks, or they may be more focused on more simple changes that we might see in a town, a neighborhood, a family, or an individual.
I'm going to interrupt Lanny because I was reminded of something, Madam Chair. Today, we've spent the last 7 hours, I think, and much of it with Senator Bryant, working on Senate Bill 555, which is a bill to really rework the way local commissions on children and families work with the state commission and other agencies. And I was struck today, after about 7 hours of working on this bill at the end, that one of the local commission people insisting on language for state governments that would talk about the state's commitment to work on mobilization and technical assistance with local community partners. And the example that Scott Johnson used from Deschutes County was the community partnership team saying, you need this language in this bill that says the state is going to be there to work on community mobilization and technical assistance in partnership with local communities, not driving it, but in partnership with local communities. I mean, I'm just struck by that observation this morning.
No problem, Gary. Madam Chair and members of the committee, indeed, our vision and our mission speaks to, we don't design things and then lay it on a neighborhood or a town or a county. We work in partnership, much as you would do as going into business with someone, or perhaps even a marriage, negotiating those things you both all contribute to the better outcomes or the better design for what you want to get done. In fact, we have five areas of work on page 10 I'll just briefly review that constitute our responsibilities in the community partnership team. One, service integration. Gary mentioned that. We have 37 projects around the state where we work with lots of local governments and not-for-profit service providers on coordinating social services for better results for clients. Usually, the folks like schools or senior centers or the department's divisions are involved. Sometimes an ad hoc group of citizens who come together as they are working in John Day right now to say, we want to bring a better set of services to the folks, the kids, the parents, the families in John Day. Volunteer services, as Gary mentioned before and you've heard in other settings, the volunteer program is a part of the community partnership team. We have staff in 34 different counties providing volunteer services for a wide range of Oregonians, whether it be transportation, mentoring, case aids, or job training. Our volunteer services are significant on the quantity of work later on. Reduced adolescent and pregnancy partnership, our goal is to have every county, maybe every neighborhood in town in Oregon have a flourishing teen pregnancy prevention coalition that brings together faith community, employers, students, parents, and service providers on what it means to do teen pregnancy prevention in your town, or what's appropriate, how do you best do it there. Oregon Lifespan Respite, as you may recall from last session, House Bill 2013, I believe, was the House Bill that passed that brought Oregon Lifespan Respite system to Oregonians. Given your leadership, we are now working with 13 different networks around Oregon to provide lifespan respite. Again, this is a coalition of all different kinds of respite care providers, from providers who work with autistic kids, to providers who work with folks with Alzheimer's, some volunteers, some of them paid. It's a local network, locally designed, locally operated. And finally, throughout the Department of Human Resources and actually throughout the industry, our office is providing leadership on how do you measure outcomes. We do workshops around the state every month. We provide the leadership and logistics across the department. And what does it mean to measure change in kids, seniors, folks with disabilities, communities, the assets in our high schools and beyond?
Madam Chair.
Representative Wilkins.
I have a question.
We are in Clackamas County, a very active Clackamas County Social Service Department. Now, I think, I don't know which of these programs it is, but there is a program that the state runs which deals with seniors with disabilities, and they have picnics or something, you know, there's kind of getting them out and making them feel good. And then there's also, you know, county social service that kind of work on some of these same types of things. Are we repeating, why wouldn't that just be one group working together?
Madam Chair,
maybe it is by this time, but it hasn't been.
As you may know, I spent 11 years working with Clackamas County Social Services, and I would be proud to say that Clackamas County is very proficient at delivering social services, and yet it is not yet, in my opinion, the strong ethic in Clackamas County to coordinate as well as they might in other settings. I would be frank with you and suggest that there are some opportunities, and we would love to work with Clackamas County service providers on those opportunities. On the other hand, I would point out, Representative Loken, that the RAP group, the Teen Pregnancy Prevention Coordination Group in Clackamas County, is one of the most proficient and most able, most inclusive, most able to work together in partnership. So it's a mix and match of different opportunities in Clackamas County.
Follow up. Okay. All right. And I understand it certainly is a mix and match. But if there is a good program there, like one, I wish I could think of what they call a program, why would the state then have to also be there to provide almost the same type of service?
Madam Chair, Representative Loken, it's a very good point. You may be talking about the RSVP program. It's a senior assistance program run by the county.
Mm-hmm.
What our volunteer office does locally for the community partnership team is provide a variety of services that are complementary and not duplicative of that local volunteer office. Having been a part of both of those, that's one of my objectives as being the director.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they'll work together and not duplicate.
I'm just thinking it ought to be one, just one, because I think there is where there is some duplication.
Madam Chair, if I would continue on page 11, we have a map that gives you some pictures of what the kinds of activities the community partnership team does in your county. I'll pick one of my favorite well-rounded counties on behalf of Senator Bryant, Deschutes, and just give you a walkthrough on what we're working on there. First, we have a service integration agreement partnership with the Commission on Children and Families that works predominantly on safety and health for kids and their families, including child abuse prevention, something that you may know, Senator Bryant, as the Dexter House Coordinated Services Project in the apartment building. We also have a family access network. We're in 11 different elementary schools across Central Oregon. They are working to coordinate services and supports for the students and their families, health, mental health, dental. Furthermore, we have a teen pregnancy prevention coalition that we support there, not only in terms of technical assistance and problem solving, but also we have AmeriCorps student interns working there. And I believe I covered the legend other than Lifespan Respite. We also have a very unique Lifespan Respite project in Jefferson, in Deschutes, that works with Jefferson and Cook in a multi-county approach, so that one network achieves the efficiencies of working across Central Oregon. If you will, in the very back of the book, that's in Deschutes, there's some detail at page 73 on the Deschutes work, or the work we do at Deschutes. The bottom of page 73 and on page 74 provides you some names and contact numbers, a little bit of explanation about what each of our endeavors does with Deschutes County. Variety of programs there. You may also notice that Lincoln County is on page 85 or Washington County on page 96. I encourage you to use the map and that appendix or index to find the details of where the community partnership team is working in your neck of the woods. a brief line on accomplishments on page 12. We've tried to organize our accomplishments according to the four goals of the department. One, where people living as independently as possible. As you may have read, we provide hundreds of thousands of hours of volunteerism for individuals with disabilities, children and families, home repair, mentoring, counseling, transportation. People are healthy as a goal. We've provided over 33.5 million miles of transportation. People are safe. Mentoring and recreational activities for over 12,000 SDF clients. And our service integration project at the bottom of page 12 illustrate how in a Coos County you can bring together a variety of services in one place to help people return to work or develop self-sufficiency plans. You may know that facility in Coos Bay as the Newmark Center. We believe on page 13 that we are indeed saving Oregonians and the legislature money. By using volunteers, we have equivalent of 460 full-time workers supporting our divisions and their clients, as well as a wide range of other service providers. And then finally, on page 13, we also bring into Oregon a great deal of federal matching money to go with local expenditures in these service integration projects. Madam Chair, I recognize the hour, and I'm at a place that if you'd like, we can pick up tomorrow, whatever your pleasure.
I think that would be really good. Because we're losing the committee, and as we become aware of the hour, that's what happens, and we would like to hear the full.
And I'm sure what I would do tomorrow is work through a little more detail on each of our program responsibilities, and then have a little bit of time for a presentation and answer some questions.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. We have 2 minutes. Do you want to just explain what we have in our packet? Do you want to actually just wait until tomorrow? And I didn't ask our staff a few minutes before we began, and she'll tell us some of the information that we have. Well, I will adjourn the meeting.